Hi there, my name is Katie Dutcher. I'm a teacher of mindfulness and meditation, a certified mindful outdoor guide, and the host of Flourish and Bloom, a brand new membership platform offering resources and events for mindfulness and self-discovery. Today, I'm excited to share with you my first episode in a long while, and this is on one of my favorite topics, cultivating joy and resilience. I recorded this episode during a live workshop on May 17th, 2023. So I'll be sharing with you here about the negativity bias that makes it very easy for us, all of us, to notice what's wrong. While this is an evolutionary gift, it's intended to help us detect and avoid danger so we can survive. The thing is that we want to do more than survive. We want to flourish. And so what we need to flourish is intentional practice to turn toward the good that is already occurring right under our noses. This is much deeper than some superficial idea of positivity. It actually builds resilience. It's this foundational psychological strength for coping and adapting to the challenges of life. So I'll also be sharing here some simple practices so that you can begin intentionally cultivating joy, and I'll offer a short guided meditation. Let's begin. My name is Katie Dutcher, and my big intention in the world is to help people to flourish by offering gentle and approachable opportunities to practice mindfulness, self-discovery, and greater well-being. And I try to do that by offering meditation sessions, groups and workshops like this one, coaching for individuals, and lots of resources for well-being. And so I'm particularly fond of this topic for today: resilience, joy, gratitude. You'll see that often we will approach wellness and well-being through another door, through a door like alleviating stress or preventing burnout or coping with anxiety. And what those all have in common is they take something that's painful or unpleasant and look at how do we help this. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I really love is also something like this, where we're not looking at what's wrong, we're looking at what's right, and we're going in through that door. And so today I will share some about our brain, how we function as humans, and what that has to do with how joyful or not we feel. We will share a few practices that foster well-being and that support resilience. And like I said, because any change or cultivation of new ways of being, it takes time and practice, I'll provide you with resources to continue onward. I'd invite you to close your eyes. And we'll start by just taking three full breaths. Breathing in through your nose. Breathing out a long, full, slow breath. Breath comes in and out again. And then there's this question, a simple one: what feels like a gift right now? Maybe your mind goes searching, or maybe something immediately springs up. Whatever you find here, staying with it for a moment. Really letting yourself tune in to the fact that this moment or this element of your life is present. It's present and you know it's present. And then letting your eyes open. That simple as it sounds is a first practice. It's an easy one, as long as we remember it. It's an easy one to thread in throughout the day because it just helps shift our inner gaze to something that is already existing. Don't have to do something extra, just to notice and remember that it exists. And so that brings us to talking a bit about the brain, about how people work. This is kind of a background. So if you think way back, way, way, way back into human history, when people didn't have all the things that we have to keep us safe, to keep us warm, to make things easy, it was hard. It was hard to stay alive in a dangerous world, right? And so because of this, our evolution has us programmed to kind of lean toward negativity as a way to keep us safe. So I'll explain a little more about that. For our long ago ancestors, things like remembering the worst things was the difference between living and dying. So for example, if someone you knew got poisoned by eating a certain plant, you don't want to ever forget that plant, what it looks like. If there was a certain person from a tribe who did something to endanger the people you knew, you don't want to forget about that history. You might tell it for years and generations. If there was a certain place and you found out that a wild animal lurked there, you don't want to forget that place. I could go on and on, but it's this idea that that vigilance and, you know, being aware of the worst that could happen ensures the survival of a species. Here's the thing, of course, we are now out of that ancient world, in the world that we are now. Many of us, luckily, have the basics for survival kind of as a given, right? That we are not so much worried about poisonous plants and dangerous animals and things like that. And so survival might not be something we think about often. That's a pretty lucky, amazing thing in itself. What we do think about is sort of beyond that. It's a next step, which is thriving. I don't just want to live. I want to be happy as I'm living. And so those same things that keep us alive, the vigilance, the I notice and remember every difficult thing, they might keep us alive, but they don't let us thrive very well. They don't keep us very happy. An example of this, one time I gave a presentation and they had a place to submit feedback. And there were a lot of things. Oh, that was nice. I really appreciated that. I needed that. And then there was one that was something like, you know, in the first part that you talked about, you said the word like, 23 times or something like that. And the person said that, as you can see, I remember it. I remember that years later. And I don't remember the specific positive comments. This is that survival thing, that negativity bias in action. What happens there is that, for one, it's not only that it kind of bums us out to have that negativity bias, but it's also not actually the full and complete truth, right? If you think about the whole spectrum of experience that we have as we live, yes, there are things that feel upsetting, painful, difficult. And there are also these things like what health we are enjoying, the fact that we can draw a clean, fresh breath, that we can come together in moments like these. So that too is part of the spectrum. And so the idea is to be embracing and open to all of it. And so the good news here is that even though we are still working with some ancient brain circuitry, We also have a lot of ability here, a lot of capacity for changing intentionally. And so things we can do, we can be aware of this natural bias. And I guess another thing I would add there is we can kind of let ourselves off the hook for that. It's evolution. It's not something bad that we did. And so being aware of it and then working towards balancing it out, shifting that bias, noticing more, letting in more of the good stuff that's already happening. So how do we do it? We do it through intention. So doing something on purpose, meaning to do something, and attention. What are we focusing on? Where are we putting our gaze? It's important to note here that one thing is the thing about how we can change. That is called neuroplasticity. And it's something exciting about our brains. What it means is that we're basically always practicing something. Anything we do repeatedly, we're practicing it. So maybe we practice complaining, or we practice rumination, or we practice something else. We practice taking deep breaths, or we practice gratitude. And whatever we do more and more strengthens the neural pathways. And it means it gets easier and easier to access these ways of being. So it's putting in the effort to try these new things until they start to just be part of you more and more. I want to give one caveat here, which is that what I'm not talking about, and I hope it's clear, but I want to say it anyway. What I'm not talking about is toxic positivity, which we hear about sometimes. Toxic positivity would mean to minimize or to pretend that we don't have the negative parts of our experience, to invalidate it. So it might be something like, oh, no, I'm not angry. It's fine, you know, I used to feel sad about that, but I'm over it now. You know, those things where we try to rush on past something uncomfortable, when in fact, you know, there is that whole spectrum of experience. Difficult experiences are part of how we grow, right? So we rise to meet a challenge. Negative emotions too are appropriate a lot of times. They're useful. For example, anger sometimes ignites some need to spark change in the world. Fear might be helping keep us safe. Guilt can promote a repair, an apology sometimes. A loss needs us to grieve about it, needs us to mourn. And so none of these things, they're uncomfortable, but none of them is bad or deserves to be like pushed down. So if we're not doing toxic positivity, we're just also not doing gratuitous negativity where we, you know, stir up things. We go looking on the internet for more information that would be upsetting to us. Those kinds of things that we just don't sort of kick the wheel to keep it spinning, but we open more to what this moment holds, which is often something maybe neutral, maybe nice, maybe good. We're sort of widening the frame, seeing more of the full picture. So we've talked about the negativity bias. We've talked about neuroplasticity, that we can actually do something about this bias. We can lean towards the light. I'd like to lead us in a practice now. This one is inspired by Rick Hansen, and it's called Taking in the Good. Let yourself settle into your seat. So just sitting back, hopefully finding a position that feels comfortable for now. Letting your eyes close. And I'm going to begin with the sound of the bell. So once again, we'll begin by connecting with the breath. Taking a nice, full, slow breath, letting it fill the lungs, and then releasing it completely. And I invite you now to just kind of look over the past day or couple of days, scanning for a highlight, a moment or a time period that was any of these flavors of joy. Maybe it was something funny. Or a moment of peace and oneness, a connection. Landing on this moment, big or small, and then staying with it. So keep staying with this memory, focusing on it, replaying it in your mind. Really opening to this moment, letting it be big in your mind. And you might expand it by noticing various elements of the moment. What could you see? What could you hear or feel, smell or taste? What did you feel emotionally in that moment? And how are you feeling now as you relive it, as you remember it? Was there something that was new or unexpected, surprising about this moment? Perhaps reflecting, asking yourself, what is so important about this? Why does this really matter to me? savoring this moment, soaking it in. Knowing that as you stay with it, those neurons in your brain are firing. Your brain is really registering this experience, even if it was a fleeting moment, and it's beginning to store it in your long-term memory. And it may be that perhaps there was another experience, a past experience that wasn't joyful like this, that actually was the opposite. And so in a sense, this precious moment that you're remembering is good medicine for that other painful moment. If you like, you might hold both of these moments in your mind, allowing yourself to feel that the past need is being met. The past wound, perhaps, is being healed. Turning your attention inward, sensing what's happening in your body right now. Noticing what it's like to take in the good. And knowing that not only are you doing this right now, you're learning how to do this, building a skill. You're becoming skilled at creating new neural circuitry for resilience. Letting go for now of this memory. Following your breath for a cycle. And listening to the sound of the bell. In your own time, letting your eyes open and perhaps shifting around in your chair a bit, stretching. I find that when we share about these moments, it's a whole nother practice in itself of joy to hear about the moments. And part of this is, again, because of our neurons, the mirror neurons, which are meant for connection. When I hear what you say and see your smile, I start to smile too. I think an important part of this practice from Rick Hansen is that linking together of a time when a need wasn't met and a time when it is being met. It's again, not that one erases another, right? It's that we can hold that they both exist. Whereas if we didn't remember and retain that other memory, then we're just left with the one. And so they help to kind of connect to each other. It helps us. I want to make an intentional link to resilience because, you know, one thing is while these moments are happening or as we remember them, it feels good. It just feels good in that moment, which is which is lovely. We need to recognize that. And it's also about more than feeling good. It's as I was weaving into the meditation, this is also a skill. This is an ability to create and strengthen positive meaning. And so why does it matter so much? Why is it more than just kind of feeling good? Here's where I want to bring in the work of Barbara Friedrichsen. She's a positive psychologist, and I read her book called Positivity long ago, right before I started my mindfulness practice, and it really helped me. It gets kind of sciencey, but it's a really helpful book. And so what she did is she did research on positive experiences and negative experiences, how people perceive them. And specifically, she had people kind of track their experiences. And what she was looking at is the ratio of positive to negative experiences in people's lives and what that means for, you know, how they're doing more generally. And so what she found is that if there's mostly negative experiences, negative emotions on the unpleasant things occurring, we will feel over time like we are struggling. A word she uses is languishing, kind of just barely sort of limping along. But then she looked at individuals and groups, and she found that there's actually a tipping point, that it's about three positive experiences to one negative, that if we reach that tipping point, then we flip over from this languishing or just kind of to flourishing and thriving. So what does that mean? Because 3-to-1 is significant, right? It has to do, you know, in relationships, if we say one negative thing, know that probably three positive things are going to help, you know, balance the load for the person we're talking to. It also means, you know, we don't usually get to choose or to opt out of the difficult things, the stress, the change, the heartbreak, but we do often get to choose what else we're putting in the pot, what other experiences we choose to have that light us up, and what we do with those experiences, how we intentionally absorb them or not. So we may not get to choose every element of our experience, but where we do have choice, then we make the choices that support our well-being. And when those moments arise, even if they're small, that we tune into them so that they become bigger, so that we absorb them more fully, kind of adding them into our mental and emotional bank. As we do that, we will have a better chance of not only surviving, but thriving, flourishing, even and especially in the midst of troubling times, right in the middle of a difficult moment, that we've got a broad enough kind of base and enough tools to make it through and also grow. And when I was thinking about this, because some of these are such little moments, right? Or these little things like that we don't think of a lot, like a ceiling fan or a nice sip of tea, a smile from somebody. Those things seem little, right? And yet, if I can give an image, if you think about if you were in a really dark cave, completely black, you can't see anything, then you strike a match. It's tiny. It's just very small. It's not a spotlight or a flashlight, but that's a really big difference, right? Or if you lit a candle, that's a really huge difference between being totally in the dark. And then imagine if over the course of the time in that cave, you lit 20 candles. It starts to make a really big difference. And so back to what Rick Hansen says, he says that the key to turning the passing experiences into lasting resources is positive neuroplasticity. So what he says is, first of all, have an experience. Have it. And so maybe it's just something that happens spontaneously, or maybe it's something that you chose. You said, I really like to go sit in the sunshine, and now I'm going to do that. So have an experience. First, what I want to say is it's important there, that thing about making those experiences available to ourselves. A lot of times it's a shift from thinking that those moments are just not important, optional, maybe even decadent. Oh, I don't really need that. I don't really need to add that extra thing. To start viewing these positive ingredients in your life as real tools that are important for your actual mental and even physical well-being. So you have the experience, and then when you're having it, enriching it, absorbing it, linking it. And I want to repeat there some of the prompts from the meditation. So some of the ways that Dr. Hansen says to enrich it is, one is to lengthen it, like we did in the meditation, stay with it for a while, even in the moment that, you know, if you're walking along and like the other day, I catch sight of baby goslings around the lake, I don't just keep walking. I really go for it in terms of like remembering that I love this and they're here right now in this season. So staying with it and then intensifying it, letting yourself get a little excited about it, maybe breathing more deeply in that moment, expanding it. Let's take that one. If I'm noticing these baby goslings, I'm looking at them carefully from a safe distance. I'm noticing the colors, counting them, remembering if I saw the same ones yesterday. Maybe I'm also tuning into the whole bigger picture, the sunlight, the green grass, and so on. So expanding it in that way. And then freshening it. Our brain enjoys novelty. And so if there's something in it that you can notice that surprises you or that's really interesting, that also helps it to sort of make its way in a little deeper. And then valuing it, right? Noticing in that moment, this is meaningful. This matters to me. Those are all ways to kind of enrich a moment that is happening anyway. So why not take it in? And what I like to add about this is that another reason why this is so important, it goes beyond the individual. The individual, you, me, we matter. Our well-being matters. And because we're interconnected, because of those mirror neurons always at work, what we're doing and how we're feeling really ripples outward. It affects a meeting we go to, a friend we talk to, the other people in the grocery store. And so if we are, you know, lit up by something or feeling more inner resources, it actually goes beyond us a lot of times in ways that we don't even know that our smile then becomes a positive moment for somebody else. Just knowing that too, that it not only matters for us, but it matters for others as well. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Flourish and Bloom podcast. And many, many thanks to all the people who attended this workshop live. When I listen, I can hear in my voice the energy that comes when I'm speaking with people who are warm and engaged, and I really appreciate their presence. And if you would like to join us for workshops and benefit from guided meditation, journal prompts, tons of self-access resources on joy and other important topics, I hope you'll come on over and check out Flourish and Bloom. We're at flourish.katiedutcher.com. Your mindful and spacious life awaits.